Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we'll recap the Miami Heat's win over the Detroit Pistons, talk about Josh Richardson's development as a scorer, and talk about his chances of making the All-Star team. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. Let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the Heat and the NBA for the Step Back. David Ramil, my usual co-host, is out today, so I'm going solo. And I want to try something different today, and maybe this will suck, but I haven't had to write a game recap in a long time. And I thought that Monday night's win versus the Pistons was a good enough game and had enough going on that I thought I'd give it a try. It's not published anywhere again. I just felt like writing it. Maybe that makes me a nerd or something. I don't know. But since I'm at it alone today, what I'm going to do is just read that recap to you. Again, I don't plan on doing this probably ever again, but I'm alone and I figured if I'm going to do it, now's the time. David can't yell at me because it might be a bad idea. So I don't know. So here we go. Here's the recap. Ready? This is like a newspaper-style recap. Keep that in mind. Entering Monday night's game against the Detroit Pistons on a three-game losing streak, the Miami Heat needed a win. It took overtime, but with a 120-115 win, the Heat avoid a 3-6 start, and they have their youngest contributors to thank. The Heat started the game with an urgency that's otherwise been absent, jumping out to an early 12-5 lead. The Pistons, however, quickly answered back with a 20-2 run to go up 23-14 with 3 minutes and 27 seconds left in the first quarter. It seemed the Heat were poised for yet another disappointing night, but an 11-1 run to end the first quarter gave Miami a 1-point lead going into the second period. The game remained close thereafter until the Heat built up a 12-point lead at the start of the fourth quarter. However, the Pistons rallied back thanks to Andre Drummond scoring 9 points and grabbing 7 rebounds in the final minutes, including 2 crucial putbacks to force overtime after Dwayne Wade missed 2 free throws with less than 20 seconds remaining. Without Hassan Whiteside, who missed the game after injuring his knee in Saturday night's loss to the Atlanta Hawks, the Heat started Bam Adebayo, who, despite getting out-rebounded by Drummond, provided a more dynamic presence than the more traditional center model of Whiteside. On one occasion in the second quarter, Adebayo successfully boxed out Drummond for a defensive rebound, then turned to push the ball down the floor himself when he drew an offensive foul on Drummond, at that point the second for the Detroit Bruiser. Overall, however, it was an up-and-down night for Adebayo. He struggled to match Drummond's size and strength and was easily boxed out by Drummond for those two aforementioned putbacks. The Pistons ended up grabbing an astounding 21 offensive rebounds in the game, 11 of which belonged to Drummond. The Heat once again got a big contribution from Josh Richardson, who, after last week set career highs not once but twice, finished with 27 points on 11 of 21 shooting, 8 rebounds and 4 assists in one of his most complete offensive games of the season. Goran Dragic and Dwayne Wade also chipped in 21 and 18 points respectively. Without Whiteside, Heat head coach Eric Spoelstra opted for a starting unit of Goran Dragic, who returned after missing Saturday's game in Atlanta, Richardson, Rodney Magruder, Justice Winslow, and Adebayo. It was Spoelstra's first time starting the unit that features all three of Miami's promising young core. He stuck with them at the end too, flanked by the veteran presences of Dwayne Wade and Goran Dragic, allowing them to play through a close game and one as close to a must-win as possible this early in the season should be a learning experience for all of them. Richardson particularly stepped up in overtime when he scored 7 straight points and showed a diverse scoring portfolio. There was a blow-by drive to the rim, a tough turnaround jumper from the left block, and then an in-rhythm three-pointer to give the Heat a 1-point lead with 1 minute and 5 seconds left in overtime. Later, Adebayo and Richardson both went to the line and made both of their free throws to seal the win for the Heat. A lost Monday would have surely led to further questions about the direction of the team, but with the win, the future of the Heat seems to be clearer than ever. All right, I don't know if that worked. I don't know. I don't know if you enjoyed that. I don't know if you already have turned off the podcast. I'm probably not going to ever do that again. But that was the recap of the game. That was it right there. I mean, specifically Josh Richardson, and I want to talk about him later on, but had a really just look to be in control of that. I mean, yeah, 27 points on 21 shots, so not the highest efficiency scoring night for him. But I thought he was in control of the game. Again, we'll talk about that later on. Bam Adebayo mentioned a lot in the recap there. Look, I think you could see some of those offensive rebounds at the end of regulation where Drummond had those two offensive putbacks, and he basically just climbed right over Bam Adebayo. Didn't worry about him at all. And those are the moments where you miss a guy like Hassan Whiteside, right? Where Whiteside could at least put the body on him. Whiteside's not the best at boxing out, but he's been good this year. He's a great rebounder. He's just a big body in the paint there that makes it more difficult for Drummond. If Whiteside's in the game at that point, chances are Drummond doesn't get those rebounds. But then again, if Whiteside was available tonight, I don't know that the Heat win this game. And that's really not so much a knock against Whiteside. I think that he would have matched up well against Drummond, but what Adebayo brings to the table as far as being able to switch out onto the perimeter and, you know, being able to just trap ball handlers out there, being able to be comfortable defending in space against other guards, that's the sort of thing that you don't necessarily see in the box score. I say it was an up-and-down night for Bam, and he ended up as an even zero in plus-minus for the game. It was very much up-and-down for him. But he's doing those things where he's able to take away some of the three-point shots because he's able to get out on the perimeter and trap ball handlers. That Whiteside can't do that. And so even if what Whiteside brings to the table, and the reason why players like Whiteside survive so long in the NBA is because the things that they do are very visible. And the things that they do are easily tracked in a box score. Right? Offensive rebounds, defensive rebounds, blocks. You can see that in a box score. What you can't really see is the things that Bam Adebayo does. You want to see that at like the peak level? Go watch a Warriors game and watch what Draymond Green does. Bam obviously is not to that level. Draymond Green is playing some of the best basketball he's ever played. Probably going to win Defensive Player of the Year this year, but doesn't record a ton of blocks. He does. Doesn't record a ton of them. Not going to lead the league in steals. Not going to lead the league in defensive rebounds, but his ability to fill in the cracks, get and just play passing lanes and get out into the perimeter and make things difficult for guys who are either shooting or trying to get to the rim is extremely important. And that's the sort of thing that Bam Adebayo did and should be able to provide. And it's just a matter of him doing it more consistently. And then, of course, at the end of regulation, not getting boxed out twice for offensive rebounds that end up tying the game and send the game to overtime. That was a mistake. That was something that he needs to improve on. He needs to improve on his boxing out. That's been an issue in his first 2 years so far. But overall, he's able to bring things that Whiteside simply just doesn't have the physical ability to bring that are just more valuable in today's game. I'm not saying go trade Whiteside right now. I'm not saying that you need to start Bam over Whiteside right now. I'm just saying appreciate what you saw from Bam tonight, even if he visibly gave up two very bad plays. He really did impact the game on both sides of the ball, and it was good to see him do that. Let's take a quick break here, and when I come back, I'm going to tell you why that was Josh Richardson's best game of the season, even after he set career highs twice last week. We'll be right back. You know, ever since launching the podcast, people have been asking me for advice, and usually it's what team to bet on this week, and the truth is, I don't know who's going to win, but if you think that you know, you've got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they are the best bet this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online. Their mobile site is easy to use. Lay down some cash and win big today. I'd only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win. They pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account to claim that bonus and let them know that you came from us. You play, you win, you get paid. We'll get to some of your Twitter questions later on, but I want to talk about that game for Josh Richardson. I thought it was the best he's had all season long. There was a balance to it that We've seen a little bit here and there, but was really on full display tonight. Look, he had in that game 4 assists and 8 rebounds to go along with his 27 points. So that ties his season high in rebounds with 8. He had 8 rebounds earlier in October against New York, but only had 1 assist in that game, had 4 assists tonight. Had 27 points tonight, which is not really close to his season high. Did it on 21 shots, but I thought they were the right shots. And I thought that if you look at his shot chart, they came from different areas. You look at his other high-scoring games, 32 points against Atlanta. He had to take 10 three-pointers to get there, right? And he made 6 of 10. I'm not saying he shouldn't have. He was feeling it against Atlanta. You know, he scored 32 points on 18 shots. He also had 3 assists, just 1 shy of what he had tonight. But these two games are the best he's played. He is getting better he's getting better over the course of this season after he had already gotten better between last season and the start of this season, right? He is continuing to find an efficiency that just wasn't there early in the season. You look at the 28 points he put up against Washington in the second game of the year, that game where Kelly Olynyk got the offensive rebound to win the game. 28 points on 21 shots. And had 5 assists in that game, but also made 5 of 11 three-pointers. Really got to that 28 because he was feeling the three ball that night. Tonight against Detroit, only took 5 three-pointers, made 3 of them, went 3 of 5 from three-point range, but didn't rely on the three-pointer to get to that 27-point total. Right? You see what I'm saying here? He got to the rim. He made really tough shots in the middle area, in that yucky middle area, the mid-range that teams basically want to force you to. Well, the great players get there anyway and make shots from there anyway. Now, I'm not saying Josh Richardson's a great player yet, but I really do think he's on his way to being a really good... Like, he is showing me things already this season. I didn't think that I would see from him. He showed flashes last year of being a tough shot maker, right? Flashes. He is making those tough shots routinely. That second shot that he made in overtime, that turnaround, fadeaway, kind of pull-up, mid-range shot that he took, that's a hard shot to make. I mean, guys were swiping at the ball. He was right in the middle of all the trees that Detroit has, and he made the shot anyway. And it bounced off the rim a little bit, and he ended up getting a good roll on it, but he made it. And that's a hard thing to do. I mean, that was something that we would see Dwayne Wade do. So for Josh Richardson to make those tough shots says everything about how he's improved this season. Yeah, as a rookie, he was making a bunch of three-pointers, and you see the point totals go up from that. Throughout his career, he's shown flashes of being able to get to the rim and finish strongly and finish with explosiveness. But he's not having games where he's finishing at the rim or he's making three-pointers or he's making tough shots from mid-range. These games lately, he's doing all of it. He's doing all of it in one game. You're seeing him make a tough shot in the post. Then you're seeing him go and hit a three-pointer in rhythm. You're seeing him hit threes this season off the dribble. I mean, he is a really good offensive player, and by the way, still bringing you that all-NBA-level defense. He was Miami's best two-way player last season. He is Miami's best two-way player, best player, just regardless of how you want to define it, this season. And I think that there are real questions now to ask, do you move a guy like Josh Richardson for Jimmy Butler? If that's on the table. If the Timberwolves are willing to pick up the phone and entertain that offer. If you're Miami, the rumor was that you had offered Josh Richardson plus Kelly Olynyk plus a 2019 first-round pick for Butler. That would be a steal for the Timberwolves with the way Richardson is playing. And I'm not trying to exaggerate. I don't want to fall into hyperbole, and I don't want to fall into, oh, well, you know, it is a small sample size. It's the first 10 games of the season. I get it. But we've seen steady progress from Richardson. And you look at the way he's not the player Jimmy Butler is right now, and he's not very close to that yet. But if he keeps playing like this, he will be. And he will be at a fraction of the cost that Jimmy Butler will demand next summer when you have to re-sign him. right? For $30 million a year. Richardson's under contract for 10. And so I said this on the last podcast. I'll say it again now. If you trade Josh Richardson right now for Jimmy Butler, the team gets better. The Heat end up probably as one of the top five teams in the Eastern Conference. I think Jimmy Butler is that good and can get you there, and that Miami is that deep. And if you put Jimmy Butler in there, he does those things that Richardson is still learning to do, where he's able to bend the defense. Richardson can score a bunch. He's not bending the defense. He's not creating so much for others. Again, career high or season high in assists this year. 5 assists that came against Portland, had 4 assists tonight, but those assists are becoming easier. He's starting, as he gets more respect and he keeps putting these point totals up, people will start to double team him more often, and we'll see what that looks like. Jimmy Butler is able to score with 2 or 3 guys on him. He's able to do that, and he's able to put up stat lines like Josh Richardson's, if not better. He also gets to the line a whole lot more than Josh Richardson does. But Richardson's getting there. And so if you're the Heat and you want to be a top five team in the East right now, go ahead, trade Josh Richardson for Jimmy Butler. That'll get you there. But if you're the Heat and you want to eventually compete in the Eastern Conference, meaning get to the Eastern Conference Finals, maybe even get out of the Eastern Conference Finals, if you want to get on that road, if you want to eventually build a team that gets you there and have a clear direction to get there, you can't trade Josh Richardson for Jimmy Butler. You've got to go find a way to land an all-star, but you got to find a way to do it without parting with Josh Richardson. He is Miami's best asset right now. I don't think there's a question about it. There was a question about it going into the season. People were really high on Bam Adebayo, and we heard Bam was untouchable, that he would rather trade Josh Richardson than Bam. That has flipped right now. I guarantee you that has flipped right now. Josh Richardson is by far their most important asset. He has taken a leap right now that I did not expect. I don't think anybody expected him to take within the first 10 games of this year. He is a bona fide player. We have a question later on if he's an all-star. I don't think it's out of the question. Especially if you consider that, you know, Boston might get one all-star in there. Maybe Boston probably gets 2 all-stars in there. I don't know. Ben Simmons, who is a shoe-in to get in there the way he's playing, I think he eventually makes it. But hey, there might be a spot open for Josh Richardson. I'm just saying. Especially if he's putting up 27 points a game, you can't really keep him out. I mean, right now he's averaging a hair below points per game, what Jimmy Butler is averaging, basically. Jimmy Butler brings a lot of other things to the table, but like I said, Josh Richardson's getting there. And you can't trade him if eventually you want to get... If you trade him for a superstar right now, you get better immediately, but you don't get better long-term. That's what it comes down to. But if you're able to land an all-star and pair him with Josh Richardson, you get much better long-term. We're going to take a quick break and answer your Twitter questions next. We'll be right back. Thanks, as always, to everyone who sends in questions for our post-game pods. If you want to ask a question, just hit us up on Twitter, @LockedOnHeat, and use the hashtag AskLOHeat. Let's get to our first question. This one comes from Jake, who asks, with the way Josh Richardson has been playing, do you think he has a chance to make the All-Star team, even if we don't make the playoffs? Short answer is no. I don't think if Richardson plays the way he's playing, that the Heat and the Heat miss out on the playoffs. No, I don't think that he's able to make the All-Star team. He basically becomes a high-volume scorer on a bad team kind of guy, and he's not doing it to the degree of, say, you know, a Devin Booker of last year. You know, you've got to get up to that probably 30-point area to basically just barge the door in and say, regardless of my team's success, I'm an all-star. I'm hanging up 30 a game. He's not doing that. He's at 20.8 points per game right now. He's not doing enough as far as his league averages or his season averages right now, not doing enough with assists or rebounds or anything, any of these other extra categories to really get him there to look like a complete player. Now, like I said just in this last segment, I do think he will get there, and he is progressing and developing right before our eyes this season. I think that his 2.8 assists average is going to go up. If he can get that to 4, even 5, and average more than 20 points per game, then he has a real chance to be getting an all-star. He just needs that extra thing, because I don't think he's going to average 30 points per game, right? So he needs that extra thing. He needs to get to basically five assists. But all in all, the Eastern Conference, if you can't make the playoffs in the East, I don't know that you deserve an all-star appearance. It's obviously not on all Josh Richardson. He's doing what he can. He's been Miami's best player this season. It's not on him. He's not the reason why the Heat are struggling. But if you're not on a playoff team in the East, I don't know that I could vote you in. I could, in the Western Conference, I'll put you in. The West is deep. It's harder to make the playoffs in there. You have a legitimate reason of not making the play, why you wouldn't make the playoffs in the West. In the East, you don't have that. You've got to make the playoffs in the East. But look, I've been low on the Heat this season. That's not a secret if you listen to this show. But look, if they're able to make a trade and you're able to keep Josh Richardson, or even if you're able to just sort of clear things out and allow Josh Richardson to carry this team, and Miami maybe gets some guys back here and you're able to make a run, and now you get into the playoffs, I think the conversation around Josh Richardson making an all-star team becomes a legitimate one. And I think it's something that we need to pay attention to. This next question comes from Billy. Are the freedom of movement rules responsible for the high-octane offenses this year ruining the NBA? Players can't play any defense, and that's all some players really have. Several plays that used to be offensive fouls are going against the defense. I think you touched on something there that's key, Billy. Billy, Locked On Heat lifer, always, helping us with these questions. Always great questions. Touched on something important there. Players who can't play any defense, that's all some players really have. And that's true. We see that with a guy like Andre Roberson in Oklahoma City, who is basically a liability on the offensive end of the floor because he does not provide enough spacing because he can't shoot the ball. We're seeing that a little bit with Justice Winslow. I think he's got an actual shot. It's an inconsistent shot, but I think there's a real stroke there. He struggles to finish at the rim. He doesn't have great feel in the paint. He tries to do a little bit too much sometimes, but overall I think he'll be fine. But there is a real question here about the role player. It's something I've been thinking a lot about lately, and I might write a piece on this. I don't know, but the idea that the role player used to be able to be a guy who could just be your defensive, your shutdown guy on defense, right? Your closer. The Tony Allen type. You used to be able to have that guy on the roster, and that guy used to play a crucial role for you in games. Or you used to have the role player who was the dude that got rebounds, right? You just had that big rebounder. That was his role. I think that the role player now is basically limited to being a three-point shooter. Is basically limited to the Kyle Korvers and the Wayne Ellingtons of the world. That's sort of your high-level role player now, because if you can't hit the three, well, then you almost become a liability for the rest of your team. And if you can hit the three, but you can also do all these other things, well, now you're not just a role player. You're a legitimate, B-level player, I would say. If you're able to hit the three, rebound, play great defense, well, that makes you more than a role player, better than a role player. So I think there's something there. I really do. And I think it's something that it's unfortunate. And I hope that defenses and offenses figure out a better way to utilize those role players who aren't just guys that can walk in and just shoot threes and can do some other things. Last question, Mark asks, why are we playing Wayne Ellington so little and Tyler Johnson so much? This is the question. And look, I don't know. I try to have answers for you here, man. I really do. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if there's something lingering with his conditioning. If I had to answer, I would probably say that was it. I would say it was something with his conditioning. But I don't know how that gets better without playing the guy. I think that you just got to play him through those things. I don't know if it's his defense, if Spoelstra is really looking at Tyler Johnson's defense as a benefit. To me, Tyler has played better of late, not good enough to warrant playing him over Wayne Ellington, especially what Ellington brings you, obviously, from a shooting perspective. I don't know. And you know what? I really hope one of these beat reporters gets to the bottom of this thing, because it's a real question. And I don't want it to be as simple as management is telling Spoelstra to play him because he's making $19 million a year. Because if that were the case, then why did you re-sign Wayne Ellington and get yourself into the luxury tax? Why would you do that? I don't think that's a legitimate reason to play Tyler over Ellington, and I don't think that's the actual reason. I really don't. I think there's probably some pressure, but it's not the reason specifically why you play Tyler over Ellington. I would probably assume conditioning, but again, I don't know. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. As always, you can reach us by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter by using the hashtag AskLOHeat. And of course, make sure to hit subscribe on iTunes or whatever you use to listen to podcasts. And leave us a rating or a review while you're there. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time.